Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Having a crappy week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and buddy, Jacob Rett. Jacob, how you doing today?
I'm okay. I'm feeling a bit too responsible, honestly. I got a flu shot yesterday, and no one even prompted me, and then I woke up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday, so I really think I'm, like, ending my childhood, so it's good that I'm back podcasting about a children's show. Maybe I can reclaim some of it.
Yeah, that's what we do. We podcast about a children's show most of the time, just the two of us. But today, we're joined by a guest. Jacob, if you want to give him a detailed introduction right here.
Yeah, so we are joined by podcasting legend, host of the Choir Room podcast, which is putting out so much Brant Steele content that I think Mike Bloom is shaking in his pants. We're joined by Aman Adwin. Aman, how are you?
I am great. I'm so excited to be here. I love Avatar. This is such a wonderful change of pace for me because I find myself doing a lot of Big Brother stuff, Fly Survivor stuff, Drag Race stuff, recently Glee stuff, but nothing like in the realm of like fantasy. You know what I mean? Outside of like the dream sequences that of course happen in Glee. But I'm really, really excited to be here and talk about this show. It's been a very impactful story on my life. So I'm really excited and thank you guys for having me.
Yeah.
No problem.
Unlike this Big Brother season, we should have some fun. It's not going to be like all downhill from the first episode.
That's great. It only gets better. It's the gift that keeps on giving. It really is.
I listened to you, Aman, on Bryce's podcast, the Purple Pants podcast, the casual corner you guys have. That's hilarious. I really like you and Bryce's dynamic on that. I thought you bring the best out of Bryce. That was too funny.
Yeah, we really just let loose and just let our hair down in that podcast because, you got to laugh to keep from crying when it is.
Too real, too real. Yeah, Aman, how did you end up finding the Avatar? Like, why are you such a fan?
Okay, so I was actually late to the game. So this came out, 2006? So I love the years because they always matched up with whatever grade I was in. So it came out when I was in sixth grade. And I remember it being on. I remember watching the first episode and enjoying it because they had like a whole like surprise weekend release or whatever. But I didn't like, I just kind of like fell off because Nickelodeon like really wasn't my shtick back then. It was more Cartoon Network. I rolled with Ed, Edd n Eddy and Powerpuff Girls and Courage the Cowardly Dog and Cow and Chicken and all those bitches.
Love it.
and so I kind of fell off. But I went to this summer program 2 years later. So I was in eighth grade at this point. And all of my friends, like every day they would come back and at every lunch period, they would talk about, so this is what happened on the show last night and da-da-da-da-da. But they were talking about it with such like zest and like they had theories, they had like all sorts of interesting thoughts about plot points. And here I was just thinking it was like a regular old anthology type episode series where every episode was different. I didn't realize that it was an entire arc. And so when I saw them talking about it with as much like energy that I used to talk about like the Harry Potter series, I was like, all right, well, let me go back and watch, because they were like, Aman, like it's about to be over. You have to finish all of the episodes before it's over. And so I went back. So every day after that summer program, I would go back home and I would watch, because they were still on YouTube at that point, because it was lawless land. You could put anything on YouTube and it would not get taken down.
The good old days.
And so I watched all through season one, all through season two. Season three was a little harder to find because that was a current season, but I think I was able to catch up while watching it on TV and online. And I was just like, like, it was just, I could not stop watching it. And I was like, I would come back to the program every day and be like, oh my God, so this is what happened. They're like, come on. You're like 2 years late. And I'm like, no, but like, this is what's happening. And this is probably what's going to happen. And then it was just, I was completely engrossed. And I was able to catch up before the season 3 finale. And it was, I had felt so stupid for not sticking with it because it was, I'm glad that I was able to catch it before it ended and watch it with all of my friends because it really was, it's a fantastically told series and story. And the characters are all great. And it's just, I mean, there's a reason for it to be so highly regarded across all age groups. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it really is one of those shows where it just, the people, when once you get into it, you really get into it. I felt like Josh Wigler just recently had that experience himself where he watched a couple of episodes and then immediately just dived into it, consumed the whole series. And I think he's actually even done Legend of Korra as well. So I feel like it's one of those shows, once you watch two episodes, you're like, damn, I gotta know the end of this. I gotta finish it. It's just that good.
So, yeah. A lot of what you speak to is why I like it. Like, the lore is so good. Like, yes, it's a children's show. There's like silly stuff that happens, but then like the universe is so rich. Like, there's so many interesting character developments that it really is like more than just a children's show. Do you know what type of bender that you would be?
So it's interesting because I feel like for the longest time, I always sort of thought that I was a waterbender. I think I attributed a lot of that to the fact that I'm a Pisces, which is a water sign, but obviously bending and astrology, while they might share a few of the same, you know, layover characteristics, it's not 100% concrete. But as I've gotten a little older, I really feel like I might be an airbender.
Okay.
I mean, spoiler alert. I guess it's really not that much of a spoiler. This might be a basic answer, but my favorite character is Aang. I've always related to Aang the most. And just like his carefree spirit. And like that constant search for like peace and balance. That's something that I really strive to in my life. So I feel like the older that I get, maybe it has to do with the way that the world is right now, how crazy it is. And I'm trying to find my inner peace, but maybe it's turning me into an airbender. But as of right now, I would probably say I'd probably stick with water, but like air is a close second. It's a really close second.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to start mediating the world's problems, by all means, get to it. I would love that.
Shave your head, tattoo an arrow on it.
Hey, I mean, I've gotten down to the wire pretty, a couple of times with this hair, so I wouldn't mind shaving it off again.
Wow. All right. Yeah. If you do, you should definitely go with the arrow. I think that'd be hilarious to see. It's a great Halloween costume, you know, one week
away. I've always wanted to be Aang as Halloween, but I have never shaved my head and I don't want the bald cap because it looks all scrunchy. I'm like, I will never do Aang unless my head is shaved.
All right.
Maybe next year.
Is there anything you guys wanted to get into before the recap?
No, I think we can jump right in here. This episode is like universally said as one of the worst episodes. And just as a like reminder why, I think it's because it was aired so often. This episode, the one before it, Jet, a few of the other episodes were just always on the rerun. So I think it's more of just like people were grinded down from the episode. Seeing it so many times, but I think that we'll find there are lots of fun moments in this one. And I think it doesn't get all the credit it deserves. So I'm excited to break this one down.
Yeah, I actually kind of enjoyed it. And because maybe I didn't watch Avatar as it was airing, I watched it on Netflix in like 2011 or something. So I never really like had the like opportunity to like watch it when it was just airing a bunch like in a row. So I never had, it never like grated on me like it might have some other people. So I enjoyed this episode personally.
Yeah. Well, this episode starts with one of the most relatable things. Two siblings arguing. You know, Sokka's there putting together the campsite. He puts over the tent and Katara comes back and is chewing him out over the tarp. This was relatable. Like immediately I was like, this is me and my sister going at it for sure. I'm not a big camping person myself, but yeah, putting the tarps up over the tent, especially on a day where it's not going to rain, really just seems so pointless. So I was on Sokka's side in this argument. What did you guys think?
Really? I was team Katara here. What about you, Amon? Wow.
I mean, I also have, I have two little sisters. One is my twin and one is 13 years younger than I am. So I am very privy to the arguments over nothing. I probably say I'm probably more on Team Sokka here because, I mean, if you can feel the dry heat in the air and you're in like a middle of like a desert canyon, odds are it's probably not going to rain. So maybe you don't need to put the tarp up. I mean, I understand, never, you know, better safe than sorry, but, I mean, I have a pretty strong lazy bone sometimes, so.
Yeah,
I was probably be on Sokka's side here.
I mean, us and the listeners, we've probably all seen Survivor, and we've seen when those guys don't got a tarp and it does rain. The
yeah, but they live in a tropical area.
Yeah, that's true. Like if that they had true. If they had Survivor Grand Canyon, my guess is that the tarp would not be as important. I do think it's funny as Sokka and Katara are fighting here about doing their chores. They throw out some terrible insults, and I think this comes up a lot in this episode. The insults are terrible. Sokka says that Katara is queen of the twigs, which is just like, it's not that insulting. I did not find that that bad. Like, he's really pulling his punches on this one.
Yeah, and we've seen Katara roast Sokka with some actually like nasty roasts where you're like, ooh, damn, like that was a...
Yeah, with the big ears thing.
Exactly, and like stuff we've seen earlier. But yeah, even what does she call him here? She's like Mr. Lazy Bum, King of the Tents. Yeah, 0 out of 10 roast on both sides here.
Yeah, a little disappointing.
Yeah. When stuff like that happens, you know, there's quite a few of those moments in Avatar. I'm like, this is definitely a kids show.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I can imagine like third grade me probably heard Queen of the Twigs and just like laughed so hard at that. And, you know, told all my friends that they were Queen of the Twigs, but here we go. Yeah.
Definitely.
So Aang tells Katara and Sokka just to switch jobs, and he just pats himself on the back. He just like settling feuds, making peace, all in a day's work for the Avatar. Like he's chilling. And I guess that's what sets the stage for this episode, because later on he's going to make peace between these two tribes.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the theme of this episode is, you know, compromise and... you know, just trying to bring the world balance after you took that 100-year nap. A lot of catching up to do.
Yeah. True. And I like this little gag here where he sees Appa and Momo like arguing over a melon, and he slices it and gives Appa the bigger piece, and he says Appa has 5 stomachs. I didn't realize that, but Sky Bison got 5 stomachs, and the more we're learning about their anatomy here.
Yeah, I've heard that about cows, but I didn't know that bison had multiple stomachs. I guess it makes sense.
They do, actually. Yeah. I Googled it because I was
curious. Biology moment. I was a biology major.
There you go.
Yeah, cows are definitely, they're called ruminants, meaning that they have multiple stomachs to digest their food. So a bison is kind of like a cow. So same thing.
Wow. Okay, well, there you go. So more science from the Avatar. That's great. I did not know that this was factual. I thought it was kind of a goof, but there you go.
No, bison do have 4 stomachs. I looked it up, but it's nice to have a biology expert on the show compared to the uneducated take.
Yeah, my degree is putting in work here on this podcasting. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually you don't have to come with credentials. You can just say whatever you want, but I'm glad that you're coming and backing it up here. I also like how Aang is like equitable, like splitting this up. Like I think that, you know, if he was a bit younger, then maybe he would just split it half and half, but this was good. I feel comfortable if the world is at his hands, if he's splitting it up equitably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And then, so in the next scene, Team Avatar, they come across the Great Divide, which I guess is the Avatar universe's equivalent of the Grand Canyon. That's what it seems like. It's like the biggest canyon in their world. Katara's like, wow, I could keep staring at it forever. And then the music just drops and Sokka's like, all right, I've seen enough. Sokka's not impressed with this canyon at all.
Yeah, he seems more impressed with like city life or like, we saw a few episodes back. He sees that gigantic waterfall, doesn't care at all. He is totally over it. And this time he just says, well, if it's so big, then I'm sure we'll be able to see it from the air, which, yeah, I bet getting an aerial view is pretty good. Like most people don't get to go up in their Sky Bison and look at the Great Divide.
Yeah, exactly. And continue, Mom.
I should say it is kind of interesting that he's so like nonplussed about it because you lived on an iceberg your whole life. Like,
yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah, exactly.
The types of scenery.
That's what I was saying with the waterfall in a couple episodes ago. It's like, yeah, you're on an iceberg this whole time. Why don't you enjoy this waterfall? With the canyon, I can understand it a little bit more.
Yeah.
One, like, what can you see? You just see, like, a bunch of rocks and stuff. Like, once you look, take it in for the first 10 minutes, it's like, okay, you're basically seeing the same stuff over and over. But yeah, I'm surprised. Like, you're right. Why is he so nonplussed about all this stuff? He's been on an iceberg by himself as the only man of his tribe this whole time. And yet he just can't enjoy any of these, like, beautiful nature scenic places. So. Yeah, I don't know what's up with Sokka here.
Yeah, I've never seen the Grand Canyon, but I assume that you'd want to stay for like a few more seconds than like 15, especially like, like people say that it's like the coolest thing they've ever seen. Like it's so majestic and Sokka's over it. I don't know. Have either of you seen the Grand Canyon?
No, I've not.
Mm-hmm. I really want to though. A few of my friends went during spring break and I couldn't go because I had rehearsal for this musical that I was in and I was so upset and I got FOMO because they had all these pictures and I was just like, oh, I wanted to push them all in there.
Wow. Yeah, hopefully they'd have an earthbender to get them out.
Yeah, so next scene here, this Ganjin man, he shows up, he's huffing and puffing, he's ready to fight. He's not in a good mood. Turns out he's a refugee and he needs the tour guide's help to cross the canyon. And then while he's like telling all this to Team Avatar, I notice he's like getting this already like Dodo music. And I don't know, do you guys see Sokka behind him making like ridiculous faces, just straight up roasting this guy? I thought this was also a little funny gag they have here.
Yeah, he's just like mocking him right behind him. Yeah.
Yeah, because then they have like the funny like squeaky sound effect that Avatar always has, which I like.
Yeah.
And then the Zhang tribe shows up. And while the Ganjin people just look like normal bougie Earth Kingdom folk, the Zhang tribe, like, how would you guys describe their appearance? They look like barbarians to me.
Yeah, rugged. Definitely half of the tribe is infected with hepatitis C. They're living the rough life.
Yeah, their leader looks like kind of a hardcore Rosie O'Donnell. That's the vibe I got from her. Like if Rosie O'Donnell got like a little like buff and lean during an apocalypse and led a ragtag group of misfits, I feel like she'd look like the Zhang leader here.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I would much rather be
The live action series whenever they do that.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, we'll tell Netflix. Yeah, I would definitely want to be one of the Ganjin and be in the nice little silk get-ups. That's way better than like the animal skins that the Zhang tribe's wearing.
I guess we can get into it now, but it'll come up later on in the episode as well. So are you guys Team Ganjin or Team Zhang here throughout this episode? Like, which tribe did you find yourself siding with?
That's rough. I feel like I sided a little bit, because which one is which? The Ganjin is the...
The bougie people, and then the Zhangs are like the barbarians.
I think I sided a little bit more with the Zhangs, only because I'm not a big fan of, like, uppity, bougie type behavior. Like, yes, you're cleaner, I get it. I'm a clean person, too. I like to be clean. I like to have an organized, you know, life. But at the same time, I don't think that makes me a better person. I just feel like that's just what I prefer. And like, they're just so bougie and I'm just like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, you're right, but like, I don't care if you're right.
Yeah.
What about you, Jake? Fair.
Yeah, I think that, Mon made some good points. Like, I don't like the bougie aspect of the Ganjin, but I do think that I've got a side with them. Like, the Zhang tribe just seems like, they just seem a bit too okay with things. Like, they have these like gigantic swords that have to be used essentially for hunting. I'm not sure I could fit in with those people at all. I think it'd be better being a bad bougie member than a bad hunting member. I would just like sit there and not want to participate at all.
Yeah, you guys both make some good points, but I'm Team Zhang all day, especially in this episode. The Ganjin, like, they're so rude. They just keep... I notice in every exchange when they're hurling insults, it's always like the Ganjin have some, like, nasty remark to throw the Zhang's way. And they always start, like, the exchanges. So, yeah, no, I'm Team Zhang all day. Would I be the best member of their tribe? Probably not. I'm pretty, like, hygienic and, like, I don't know, I'm not a big hunter myself. I don't got chicken thighs in my, like, clothes to bust out and eat. So I don't know if I'd be the best member of the Zhangs, but that being said, I support them and what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, so then this earthbender rolls up, and this man is, he's the MVP of the episode, my point. He's pretty wise. I think he's got like some good wisdom for Aang a little bit later, but this man's just silly. Apparently, so he's, when he's walking up to them, he walks up from like behind the rocks, which means I think he's like spending his free time in the canyon. Cause like, if not, then I don't understand the direction he's coming from. So I think this man just like, just chills in the canyon all day. Yeah. What are your thoughts on this earthbender tour guide?
Yeah, I think he's crazy. I think he's crazy. I think he stayed a long time down in the pits. And I think in order to completely become unhinged, he has to be as jovial as possible. But I think the man needs a vacation. I think he needs to like find him, like just take a couple weeks up in the upper ring of Bossing, say something, because you are losing it, my friend.
I think they even like the episode kind of jokes about that later on, because you're right, like this old dude, he seems like a nice portly chap. I don't know if I'd call him the MVP of the episode, but he seems like a decent guy. But then as the episode progresses, like he does start to get a little more unhinged, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, so yes. Then we get back to the Gonjin and the Zhang just going at each other. They're, you know, they're yelling at each other, saying that they get to go first. And I don't know, like, who do you think was right in this situation? Because it seems like the Earthbender can take reservations. So do you think that the Gonjin should have gotten to go first?
If they showed up first, then yes, but then again, typically how reservations work is like you cannot get, at least at a restaurant, you cannot get served until your entire party is there. Like we don't partially see. So yeah. Only one of them was there, but the entire Zhang tribe rolled up and it's like, well.
Okay.
So, yeah, yeah, I'm with Amon here, honestly, because exactly what you said. If the whole Gonjin tribe, maybe I'm biased because I'm Team Zhang, but if the whole Gonjin tribe was there first, then fine. They deserve to go. But then, yeah, the Zhangs show up with their full party, so they had all the right to go, in my opinion, at least.
All right. Well, yeah, so that's what they claim. The Zhangs say that their members are sick, and the Gonjin say that their people are old, and Katara bumps in as they're arguing and says, hey, Aang, like, you want to solve this one too? And yeah, Aang takes this one on. Pretty impressed by Aang here, essentially saying that, you know, both tribes have to come together and go on the path together instead of waiting an extra day.
Yeah, this is the first time we see Aang really being like a diplomat, like taking on that role as the Avatar. Prior to this, it was mostly just him just beating up bad guys. But now he's here settling disputes, doing what the Avatar does.
Yep.
Yeah, good for Aang, you know, just really stepping it up to the plate, you know.
Did you guys take note
of
food
in the canyon, though?
You guys take note of the insults here. So the Gonjin tell the Zhangs they wouldn't have so many sick people if they weren't such slobs. And then the Zhang lady, she responds, she's like, you Gonjin, if you weren't so clean, maybe you wouldn't live to be so old. Is that an insult? I wrote this down. I was like, is this even a roast?
Like, that's just, I remember not a compliment. Laughing at that line a lot when I was younger. I remember being like, I remember like completely falling out over that line because I was like, you know what? She's got a point. Y'all are so damn healthy. That's why y'all are so old.
Yeah. I feel like people shouldn't get punished for having good life expectancy. Like, you know, like, yeah, people should not have to, like, as soon as they hit like 60, it's like, well, you made it this far. No one expected you to. So, you're on your own. Yeah. Terrible take. See, this is why you can't be, Team Zhang. Their, takes are terrible. And this is what I was saying earlier. The insults this episode are just so bad. Like, you know, the Queen of the Twigs, like, you're so clean that your people live a long time. Like these are not insults. Let's step up our game.
True. That's correct. Like, honestly, thinking about that, I think you're right. As I'm running through the insults, yeah, they were all kind of weak, not going to lie.
Yeah.
So Aang's compromise here, he's going to, Appa will fly the sick and elderly of both tribes over by himself. And what's crazy is, like, why is it just, like, why doesn't he send Sokka or Katara with Appa? Because, like, what if these, I know it's the old and the sick people, but what if they just start beefing on top of Appa and just get into, like, a brawl mid-flight? Like, right? I don't know. It seems kind of risky. What do you guys think?
I mean, I know Appa's, you know, he grew up in the Air Kingdom, so he's probably all about that same equal balance up that Aang is on. But honestly, Appa, if those people start fighting on your back, just roll over.
Yeah, that's a pretty
you
good
You did not threat. Sign up for this.
Yeah, that's a really good deterrent to fight, is once you're like a few thousand feet in the air, it's just like, yeah, if you fight, you're falling. Like, it's up to you. Mm-hmm. The thing I was more worried about is cross-contamination. Like, it seems like if these people have sick people, we should not put them near the elderly. Like, maybe they don't have the up-to-date science, but I feel like that's just a terrible idea. You know, I guess we're more informed now because of a pandemic, so we know, like, best science.
Well, yeah, how large is Appa? Because if he's more than 12 feet, then we can get...
Okay, yeah. There we go. Maybe maybe the Gungeon have masks that they can wear and socially distance.
You know they do. You definitely know they do.
For sure. And then so the Earthbender tour guide says that one little caveat to cross this dangerous canyon is that all the food has to go away, or these like creepy little spider things will come and get you. The canyon crawlers will come get you. So they all have to eat their food. And it's hilarious. Everyone just starts scarfing down food. Like, it seems like it's in the morning. Like, they probably already had breakfast. Doesn't matter. They're going for second lunch already. Scarfing it down.
I think this is the best gag in the episode, because then it shows the Gungeon. They're eating all prim and proper with chopsticks. What bougie losers. And they have like the dainty music and stuff. Meanwhile, the Zhang tribe, look at that. These alphas, they're pulling out chicken legs, buns straight out of their vest. Who needs utensils when you're a vicious savage like the Zhangs? Wow.
I guess. And you really hope that they put the extra food on Appa, because if not, like, I don't know what they're going to do.
They waste a lot of food this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like something that I never really quite understood. It was just like, don't bring any food into the canyon or the canyon crawlers will come out. So the canyon crawlers don't smell humans. They just smell food. Because don't they eat the humans anyway? So wouldn't they, if they eat humans, and they should be able to smell humans? That's just like how predatory behavior works. You should be able to track your prey without them having to smell like...
Yeah.
Like, if I want a human, I don't have to wait for that human to smell like chicken. I'm just going to eat the human.
Yeah, this is the thought that I had too. Because, yeah, this point makes, you know, so much sense. If these people are so, like, or these canyon crawlers are so hungry that they're going to try to eat the humans, like, it seems like they're just, like, looking for, you know, a byproduct of the humans. Like, oh, I smell chicken, therefore it must be human. Like, if they evolve one more step...
How do they know what chickens
humans,
smell like? Or chickens down in the canyon?
Right? If they evolved one more step, then they would be, like, way more dangerous. And this episode would be, like, a lot more action-packed, I'm sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know... I'll accept it. I'll suspend my disbelief. It's fine.
No, right. I honestly, I didn't even think of that, but you guys are absolutely right. So should we just get into it? So basically, they start their travels. The old man, he's just doing basic tour guide stuff. He bends away a rock avalanche, yada, yada. Then a canyon crawler attacks the tour guide out of nowhere and breaks his arms. And honestly, the canyon crawler might be one of the more terrifying creatures we've seen in Avatar. Like, outside of maybe, like, Ko the Face Stealer, who we'll see in, like, a couple of episodes, this is pretty, like... Like the canyon crawler, I don't know. It's like the spider arachnid body with its like lizard face. It's pretty huge, like about 10 feet long. Like, yeah. What'd you guys think of the canyon crawlers?
Yeah, they're vicious. They're menacing. They're ugly, and they look like they stink. Yeah, I just
yeah, they're gross.
Yeah, these things are really, these are dangerous. And I don't know what their plan is if Aang and the rest of Team Avatar is not there, because without Aang's airbending to essentially like tornado these things away, I think the whole group is just killed and like never hear from again. Like, maybe there's a few like crosses scattered throughout the canyon, but yeah, like these people are gone without Aang.
No, totally they definitely are. 100%.
It makes you wonder how like this tour guide was able to survive if he couldn't even that little swarm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because one canyon crawler, like, subdues the tour guide, and then later on they come across, like, 20, so you're 100% right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Earthbender is actually pretty smart, though, at keeping his job security. He says that you have to, like, destroy and rebuild the path every time so the Fire Nation doesn't come get you, but it really just seems like he needs to be there, because without that, then, like, you know, someone could just walk and like he could set up the path to where you don't actually need him to go with you. But instead, he destroys the path every single time, ensuring that you have to pay him the next time. He's a smart businessman. We got to give him some credit.
That's true. That's true. He says he can't bend without his arms. But I feel like in this series, we see numerous earthbenders and benders of all types bending without using their arms. Like off the top of my head, I remember like Bumi bends with just his head. Toph has bent with just her legs numerous times. So I thought this was kind of weird.
Yeah, he's probably like a pretty low tier earthbender.
That's true.
Because Toph is like a freaking prodigy, so he's probably just like he probably could bend a little something with just his feet or something, but it's probably not as strong because he doesn't develop that skill.
True. You guys are right. He probably just like chuck pebbles at people, and that's like the extent to what he can do with his feet.
See, I was thinking like you're a C-tier earthbender. If you're stuck doing tour guides of the canyon, that's got to be terrible instead of like, you know, doing any other sort of fun stuff. Like you could be king of Omashu or you could be like a tour guide.
Dailie member or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I thought was funny, as he's walking down the canyon, he says that earth spirits carve the canyon. And Avatar has been pretty good about getting science correct. Like apparently, I didn't even know this earlier, but like the bison have multiple stomachs. There's been a few other times where they've gotten some correct science, but these earth spirits just seem like totally wrong. Like, do we think it was actually earth spirits or is this tour guide just like off his rocker?
I mean, we know spirits exist in their universe. So while it might not be rooted in science, like, I don't know, I feel like spirits could have carved the canyon out. That's not too impossible to believe happened.
All right. That's fair. I was hoping that, you know, Avatar was going to be a science show, you know, bison. And if they're telling you about how like rivers make canyons, then yeah, I think you could show this in school.
You just want to be taught. You want like an educational lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
So the next scene starts, and once again, we got the Ganjians. They're hurling insults first. They're accusing the Zhangs of bringing down food. Like I said, I'm Team Zhang all day, especially because later on, the Zhang will actually show remorse for bringing down food, whereas the Ganjin are not remorseful at all, in my opinion, at least.
I think you're biased here.
I'm biased. I readily admit that.
Again, we get a terrible insult. The insult being thrown around here is you're a food hider. Like, come, I just wanted something a little better, but there we go. Food hider.
Yeah, that's the worst insult ever, but it's just funny how she has like the vitriol with that insult because she's like, you food hider. It's like, whoa, like, oh man, she called him a food hider. Gotta watch out. She's busting out like slurs like that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and then this old man, he's having the existential crisis right here. He's like, they're going to die down there, become part of the food chain. They got like this ancient aliens music in the background. Why do you abandon all hope? That's what I
understand. He was hanging, because he's crazy. He was hanging on by a thread, okay? That was all it took for him to just lose his marbles.
Yeah, I guess that's why you don't push people that are already on the edge, because one little thing, and he's like ready to go from dust you were, to dust you be, I don't know the thing. Anyway, he was ready to go back in the food chain. There you go.
Yeah, man. But it was just funny because like one second he's their like sage leader just leading them through this canyon, and the next second he's just like, oh, we're all gonna die. It's over. That's it. Like just and he's got the Avatar with him. So I'm surprised at his lack of hope. So Aang decides in the next scene, he's like, okay, getting these tribes to get along is futile. They're just going to keep beefing. There's no hope. So he sends Katara with the Ganjins and Sokka with the Zhangs. And then, of course, Sokka ends up falling in with the Zhangs and Katara with the Ganjins. Did you guys have anything else you guys want to talk about with this scene?
I mean, I felt like the splitting of the brother and sister was quite apropos.
Yeah, I kind of thought like what would happen if Aang were to split them the other way. Like I think Katara is just like disgusted by these people. I think that she would be coming out and she would not believe their story. But I think that Sokka would kind of fit in with the clean people because they're going to put up the tarps for him. The only thing Sokka didn't want is to do the work. I don't think he minds having a tarp up. So I think that Sokka would get along pretty well with the Ganjin. Maybe I'm just biased, though.
Would they like Sokka, though, or would they just see him as like a dirty oaf?
He's not that dirty. Sokka's like a nice middle ground. I feel like, yeah, if you have to pick between Ganjin or Zhang, you should probably just go the middle ground and go Sokka. You know, a little bit lazy, but not like too much of a, I don't know, bougie person.
Yeah, speaking of bougie, these Ganjins, they reveal to Katara, they're the ones who snuck in the food. I never had a doubt. These bourgeoisie Ganjins coming in with their food, trying to blame, always blaming the proletariat Jangs. Tisk, tisk.
Oh my goodness. Your bias is showing through so much. I'm not sure I've heard more bias reporting in since I guess like last time I watched the news, but
I mean honestly, I think that this is quite the ultimate theme of this episode is just like don't cast stones, right? Because living in the world that we are in now, we see this kind of thing play out time and time again where you demonize or pathologize an entire group of people because you believe that their belief system is inherently flawed. Whereas if you actually take a deeper look at some of the things that you hold dear, you'll find a lot of the same similarities and same qualities and same faults, but you don't want to challenge yourself because challenging yourself is hard. So you point the finger. And yeah. So you just see these two tribes doing the same stuff to each other.
That's a really astute observation on your part, Amon. We never usually get that deep on this show, to be honest. It's usually just us making dumb jokes, but you're absolutely right. It is true when you do have like two marginalized groups of people. Sometimes they just get into beefs over stuff that both of them pretty much have in common. So it's kind of like dumb to even have a feud like this.
Yeah, you made a great point. Whenever you said don't throw stones, I just thought that the earthbender can't because he broke his arms. I think that shows you where you are versus where I am. I came up with a terrible joke and you had a really poignant observation. But no, I think that's a great point. Like, yeah, so many times people are just distracted by like whatever identity they give themselves and they don't realize that they really do share a lot in common. Then we go back to, go on.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, so the next scene is like, so basically while Katara and Sokka are falling in with the groups, the Zhangs and the guy Jin, they both tell this story of Jin Wei and Wei Jin, and they both have their own versions of this Jin Wei story. So the Ganjin's version is just like Jin Wei is transporting a special orb from the Great Eastern Gate to the Great Western Gate, and the Wei Jin steals from the Zhang tribe, steals the orb from him, and the Zhang story is that Wei Jin was actually helping Jin Wei, and then the Ganjin people just jailed him for no reason. So it's basically like a he said, she said story. Like even if this is true, like, or one of these people is telling the truth, I think this is such a stupid thing to have like a blood feud with another tribe, like such a stupid dispute to be having for 100 years. I don't know. Seems kind of goofy to me.
Yeah, it's not a good look because like ultimately you're going to hate someone because they stole like a little ball. Like, that's really what you're going to fight over. But I do think that the coolest part about this story is that the animation style changes as they tell the stories and you have the fancy people, the Ganjin having this animation style, which is like really idyllic and it's like proper. It's like picturesque scenes, and then you get to the Zhang and it's like blocky and weird. It's like kind of a ragged cool edges. Style though. Yeah, ragged
like
edges,
kind of like underdeveloped.
Yeah, like really saturated colors. It was really like a big break, and I thought that was cool. Which animation style did you like better?
Go ahead, come on.
I feel like I'm probably more conditioned to like the one for the Gaijin because you know, it's more traditional. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like I like them both equally because of the fact of what they stand for, just like those stark contrasts between the two. I know that's a kind of like a fancy vintage answer and I hate doing that, but like, I think you really can't appreciate one without the other, you know? So.
Yeah. It was a great way to tell the stories as well. Zach, are you as biased about this as you are the rest of the episode?
No, I'm not. Okay. Honestly, gun to my head, I'd probably say I prefer the Ganjin animation style, but I really like the fact that the animators did this. I thought you could tell they were having a lot of fun with this episode, and especially, just like Amon said, the stark contrast between the two. I thought excellent job from the animators here.
Yeah, and I think the storytelling is pretty interesting too. So they both have these like stories that they're recounting to both Sokka and Katara. And I think it's like cool how you essentially can see the prisoner's dilemma. Like you see the two camps, like they both think that the other person's going to do something bad. So they do something bad themselves. I think that, it's a really interesting way to tell the story about, you know, showing that they both lied and then showing their side of the story is like an interesting way to view this mechanism. I thought it was a good way to tell this tale.
Yeah, Asaka doesn't seem too interested when the Zhangs are telling him the story. He's just too busy like chowing down. And then they have a little gag where he like asks him, he's like, "Oh, can I have that last piece of meat?" And the Zhang person's like, "No," and just like takes a huge bite out of it. So that was funny. Asaka just couldn't care less. He's just too busy eating. Pretty on brand for Asaka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's another, you know, it speaks to the larger social commentary of it all about how we often are arguing over the same set of facts, but we just believe one core difference. And it's like that one little thing is the thing that just sends us into disarray and just sows so much distrust. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. we're probably both right. There's just one thing that it's just like, so it's just, it's really, really, I don't know. I guess it's just being in the middle of an election year, that's kind of like making me think about all that kind of stuff. But
That's fair. And Avatar and Legend of Korra as well, they do such a good job towing the line between these humorous and more goofy moments versus these more observational moments and this social commentary that they have. And that's why Avatar is such a great show, in my opinion, because they told that line so well.
They know how to do it,
Yeah, so Aang's by himself with just Momo and the tour guide. He tells Momo that they'll eat their weight in lychee nuts, pronouncing it differently than pipsqueak the last episode. Did you notice that, Jacob?
Yeah, I thought this was a little bit weird, but, you know, different pronunciations. They're from different parts of the world. So, I assume that they mean the same thing, right? Lychee nuts and lychee nuts?
Yeah. They probably do mean the same thing, but I just found that kind of odd. Yeah.
I thought it was a small goof that was funny. The other thing I thought was weird is Momo just slaughters a fly. Like, Momo just, like, claps that fly and eats it. And earlier I said that Momo was vegetarian, but I guess not. Like, not at all. Momo just demolished that thing.
Yeah, that's what Momo does. Just
do you think that you could? Everything. Do you think that you could eat your weight in lychee nuts? Like, there's no way.
Absolutely it's not. No, yeah. I don't think I can eat my weight in anything. Not. Honestly,
cotton candy, maybe.
Cotton? I don't think so.
Don't know, is it waste cotton, a little?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's that like the worst take of all time. No, that's like the pound of feathers versus the pound of lead. That's like that.
Okay. Wow. We should cut that from the podcast. That was the worst take I've ever had. No big deal.
I've said way dumber stuff. Don't worry about it, dude. But yeah. So basically, Aang's telling this old man he wishes he could get these two groups to get along. And I thought this was funny because the old man's trying like just last episode or just like last scene. He's like going crazy, and now he's just like back to being a sage old man. Like whereas a couple of scenes ago he was going like senile. I thought. Now he's just back to normal here.
Yeah, he was able to finally calm down with the nightfall. The thing I was thinking about was like, what? Second of all, weren't y'all supposed to like not bring food into the canyon? To the canyon, y'all. We already established that. And then you guys just start eating at night. Like, why? Why is it okay now? Like, aren't you just asking for it again at this point? I was glad that the tour guide and Aang were away from both groups because I was like, if anything happens, it's completely y'all fault now.
Yeah, and it sucks for Aang, too, because he can't even eat. Like, him, the tour guide, and Momo, Momo ate the fly, but those three people are basically, or three things, are basically starving, while everybody just, Katara and Sokka, too, are just chilling, chomping down, like, I don't know.
What chowing do you down.
Yeah, they're really lucky the canyon crawlers aren't nocturnal, or, like, even just, like, smelling at night, because if they were, and they smell this food coming out, they would be all over them. And here, Katara has one of the worst takes of all time, even worse than my cotton candy take. Probably not, actually. She says, "I guess it's okay to do this if everyone else is doing it." Like, that does not make it okay. I thought that was terrible. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that, put some blame on Katara for her bad takes.
Well, Katara has shown such maturity, and even early in the show, she's shown such maturity, and yet here, she's just like, oh, well, they're doing, and I can do it, too. It's like, Katara, haven't you, they don't have any, like, take on in the Southern Water Tribe, where it's like, if all your friends jump off a bridge, you wouldn't jump off a bridge either. Like, I don't know what's up with like Katara.
Off an iceberg.
Yeah. exactly. Then in the morning, they're almost at their destination, pretty much. Sokka and Katara, they've basically fallen firmly into the camps of these two respective feuding tribes. And then they're like telling Aang, it's like, oh, the Jin Wei did this, and Wei Jin did. And Aang's, if you're Aang here, it's like, why do you care about these two stories? You're just trying to get these tribes across. I'm kind of surprised Katara and Sokka are even like bothering to bring this stuff up with Aang.
Yeah, they also seem like they like act as if Aang already knows the story, but Aang spent the whole night away from them, and Katara rolls up and is like, yeah, the orb. And Aang's like, what are you talking about? Like, what? Like, literally, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, this was pretty funny. But yeah, it, terrible take. And then, you know, Sokka gets all mad. And then again, we get to bad insults already.
Again.
hurling at him.
What was the insult that they hurled here? Actually, I didn't write this one down. So what is, what do they lead with?
I forget the insult this time. I have it here. Like,
oh, no, oh, no, I have it here. So the old Ganjin man, he takes another shot at the Zhen. And again, like, this is my thing. Bias aside, honestly, I just noticed, like, in all these little exchanges, every single one, the Ganjin person threw the first insult. That's what I noticed. And that's what happens here. Because the Ganjin man, he's like, so I bet the Zhang can climb this wall with their disgusting fingernails. And that might be the most, like, deep cut insult ever. He's like, their disgusting, dirty fingernails. Y'all can climb the wall. Like, damn, what'd they do to you, man?
They are really just going at it. Oh my god.
I was hoping that Rosie O'Donnell, leader of the Zhangs, would just sock him in the face, just hit him with a right hook right now, quite frankly.
That's essentially what they do. So Aang says the statement that he says to Katara and Sokka earlier, that's like, harsh word won't solve problems, actions will. And then the Zhangs are like, oh yeah, maybe the Avatar is right. And then they start fighting, which like Aang should have known. This is just like when Batman tells the Joker, drop her in the Dark Knight, like as the Joker's like holding the girl like over the tower. He's like, poor choice of words. Like, Aang, again, poor choice of words. Shouldn't have said that actions are going to solve it, because now they're fighting.
Aang looks so happy when they're like, you're right. When the Avatar is right, harsh words won't solve anything. Because they pan to his face and you just see him like beaming. He's got the big glowing like anime eyes. I don't know how else to describe it. But yeah, so they tempers flare. They start fighting. They bust out their swords. They want a duel to the death to end their rivalry. And then Aang, he quickly quells the fight with some airbending and knocks both tribes back. And then he also knocks like all the food out of their sacks. And if you're Aang here, I'd be hella angry. No pun intended. Cause man, he's like, these people, you're starving. You didn't eat the whole night and everybody's got food except for you. Like, come on. I'd be extremely frustrated.
That custard when heaven have opened up. Being the Avatar does not matter anymore. Being upset with these two tribes does not matter anymore. All he needs to know is that, is there Aang in that custard?
Yeah, and the animation here was crazy. They have Aang, and then I think the voice actor's delivery here, it was amazing too, because he's like, is that egg custard in that tart? Like, he's so, like, it's like the most beautiful thing he's ever laid his eyes on, this little egg custard tart.
Yeah, the other thing I thought was funny is whenever they knock the food over, one of the Ganjin people tries to kick over the blanket with the food, trying to hide it, even though there's food all over the canyon floor. Like, it is everywhere. But he thinks kicking over the blanket's going to solve that one. Terrible. But like, yeah, the custard tarts, or the egg custard tarts, pretty funny too.
Yeah, so more canyon crawlers show up because now there's food everywhere, and they barely survived one, is what Sokka says, which is true. Mm-hmm. And the old man, he's back in his full-fledged existential crisis mode. He's like, they're coming back for me. They've had a taste and they're coming back for me. This old man, Amon hit the nail on the head. He's like off the deep end. He was already kind of crazy, and now he's just like fully crazy pretty much. He's like Alex Jones tier now.
Oh my gosh. Okay,
yeah. So Sokka, I found it funny here that Sokka and Katara like apologizing to each other. And Sokka is just like, yeah, he only took the Zhang side because they fed him. Like I said, pretty on brand for Sokka. As long as he's fed, he's happy.
Yeah. And here I think that this would be a great use of Katara's pocket fish that she has that we've been tracking. Using that sardine or bass to throw to the canyon crawlers. Maybe she can buy them some time, because I do think that the canyon crawlers are pretty interested in the food. So maybe if she just like throws that over there, then like you might be able to get some space and like hide from them.
Yeah, I guess humans are not their primary diet source, I guess. It's kind of like maybe like sharks or something like that. You know what I mean? Amon, you're the biology major here, so I'll let you take the lead because I'm not 100% sure, but that's what it seems like based on the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess they don't actually eat the people. They just kill them. You know what I mean?
Just to get the food.
Because when they all showed up and then Aang came up with this strategy of using the food bags as a muzzle, they all seemed to be, they were like, all right, we'll play this game with you. Just give us the food.
I thought this was a really interesting strategy for Aang to come up with so quickly. I think this points to how ingenious Aang is, but he sees that these canyon crawlers are really interested in the food and that all the food came in bags. I guess it's actually lucky that they brought so much food in here because it seems like an absurd amount of food.
So many bags.
There are so many bags. So he's able to get some of the food, throw it at one of the canyon crawlers, and then take the bag over the face and use it as a muzzle and then ride the animals. These animals get trained so easily. Like, this is next level animal husbandry here. Yeah. I was very impressed.
It's insane because this is a good plan on Aang's part, but it also seems like this is something that only Aang should be able to do. I feel like if you're not a bender, how else would you be able to just mount one of these canyon crawlers? And yet both the Ganjin and the Zhang just in the next scene, they're all they each have their own canyon crawler. They're all able to easily mount it. I think this should be only something a high level bender should be able to do, honestly.
They seem like they're pretty equipped. Like these, because these are all supposed to be the younger, more stronger people, right? Because they sent all the sick and old away. And I mean, the leader of the Zhang tribe was able to pull out that sword. I mean, you could tell that, or the guy Jin, the clean people. He was able to pull out his sword and get down and dirty. And you already knew that the others were ready to fight because they carry the weapons on them. But he was ready. Yeah. So these seem these are some people that know how to throw down.
You're right. It's just that the canyon crawler, he broke the tour guide's arms earlier. I don't know. I was I'm surprised that they were, Jacob was saying, they're so easily whipped here.
Yeah. I do think that, only Aang is able to get it by himself and the other people have to work together, which is kind of a nice part of the episode is they have to come together in order to survive and they're able to do it pretty effectively. So then they all get the canyon crawlers, they put the muzzles over their face, they put food in front of them, so it's a horse trying to chase that carrot or something. Mm-hmm. And once they get up there, they throw the food over the canyon so that the canyon crawlers all go back into the canyon and leave them alone. It seems like these canyon crawlers are going to die, though. Right? Yeah, that exactly. It seems like these canyon crawlers are probably going to die because they have the muzzles on their face. How are they going to eat?
Yeah, I guess it depends on how tight the muzzles are. Maybe if the canyon crawler could get it off with a rock or something. I don't know.
I hope.
They better work together.
That's true. Yeah.
You care about the lives of these canyon crawlers, Jacob?
Yeah.
What a kind man you are. I don't know. Yeah. I'm a pacifist too, but they're so hideous. I'd be if they died, I don't know.
All right. No, yeah. I like Amon's idea that they need to work together in order to get it off. It's another example of cooperation saving the day.
Exactly. So basically the Zhang leader compliments the Ganjin and they reciprocate it, but then they're like, we can't rewrite history though. So they're still going to continue their beef. But then Aang's like, oh, the Wei Jin Jin Wei story, that was 100 years ago. I'm 112 years old and I was there. So then, Jacob, do you want to explain this story that Aang tells here? Because this is a pretty weird story he's got.
So I will explain it, but then I have to say all of the loopholes that I think. So he says so he knows them because he's an old person that he doesn't look old, but that he actually is. So he says that Jin Wei and Wei Jin were not old people that were mad at each other. They were actually twins, much like Amon, and they were little kids. And instead of having this ritual that they were trying to complete, they were actually playing a game. So instead of an orb, it was just a regular soccer ball. And the east and west gates are just the goals. And Jin Wei ends up falling down towards the goal and he drops it, Wei Jin then picks up the ball, immediately runs out of bounds, and has to go to penalty box by a panda referee, by the way, which I do not understand how a panda's a referee, but I love it. And then instead of like spending years in prison, it's actually like a penalty for like breaking the rules. So everyone's actually fine. And it was just like a big misunderstanding. That's like essentially the story that they tell.
Yeah,
instead of this like weird blocky animation or idyllic animation, we get some baby animation, which I thought was really cute. But yeah, this story has so many holes in it. Do you guys want to talk about, like, would you believe the story? Would you see through his mist?
No, I would absolutely not believe this story. Why is the game called Redemption? That was the first thing I thought. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, that's why. Because then they're the gang general, like, yeah, we're doing it for our redemption. Then Aang's like, no, that's the name of the game. It's like, what? Like, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah, Amon, would you fall for it?
Like, he's the avatar, so you're like, okay, he must know what he's talking about, but, like, he's 12 years old, so logistically speaking, would he really, I mean, so he made them like, what, babies or 8 years old or whatever?
Yeah.
And so he would be older than them if they were alive 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But still, you would think that the oldest members of both of the feuding tribes would be more privy to the knowledge of like what happened in the past. Because granted, maybe none of them are 100 years old, but some of them's got to be at least 70.
Yeah,
exactly.
You mean to tell me that somebody, like the people that were older than them, like their parents didn't tell them the original story? He pulled a fast one over them. Granted, all of the oldest members of each tribe were away at the time with Appa, so maybe there was no one there to check him on his bullshit. But
Yeah, because 100 years ago seems so far away, but we've seen Bumi already. Bumi was like back around when Aang was, you know, originally a kid before the iceberg. So there are people that are that old. And 100 years, like, yeah, we see the old leader of the Ganjin tribe. Like, he's got to be pushing 60 or maybe 70. So his dad had to have been around when this happened. And there's no way that it's some like, you know, oh, it was actually a game. And then the other thing that doesn't make sense is the like stealing and the stealing of the orb, like being translated into a fumble. Like that was fishy. How do you get a penalty?
Because then if in any sport, if you step out of bounds, it's not a penalty. You just like throw, it's just the other team's ball. So even that made no sense. Like if you're a casual sports fan, you could see that's just ridiculous.
See, I was thinking that Wei Jin and Jin Wei should have been coaches of teams. So they could have still been old people, but then coaching younger people. That's at least more believable. That works.
Yeah.
I did like the animation style with this story where they kind of start with they start with Jin Wei and Wei Jin in their respective animation styles from earlier. And then they basically, as Aang's telling the story, they transform into like, I guess how you would describe it is like the chibi style. That's like the childlike almost Japanese animation style that they got here.
Well, these people do not see through Aang's mist. You can call him Dan, I guess. They they fall for it and they end up running off together. And then the Earthbender tour guide is just so happy to get out of there. He is like, wait up for me, I am out. You know, I almost died today.
Yeah, it's a vacation, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the tribes, they basically settled their feud after hearing Aang's version of the story, even though it makes literally no sense. In the final scene of the episode, Aang reveals to Katara and Sokka he made the whole thing up.
Yep. Classic Aang.
For the Great Divide. Overall, solid episode. Like, was it inconsequential? Of course. The ending and stuff was a little too goofy for me. But overall, I did enjoy the episode. What about you guys? What did you think?
Yeah, I think this episode's good. It doesn't have like a bunch of cross-cutting where it's going between one story and another. We're really with like one group the entire time. They do split up like temporarily, but we don't like have this same thing that we had in earlier episodes where it's going from Team Avatar to Zuko's team doing something totally different. And every 30 seconds we're switching back, which kind of gives you that whiplash. So I liked it better for that regard. But yeah, I think like, you know, people wrote in, they said like the episode is good. Like they just have seen it a lot. And I think that's fair. Like it doesn't really advance any part of the plot, but it has some good moments.
Yeah, it's a standalone episode, which is probably why it's shown so often. But I mean, I enjoy it for the social commentary of it all, especially now more than ever. And I remember being thoroughly entertained when I watched it as a kid. So I think it still holds up for me, at least.
Yeah, same. And I think it's just tough to compare to like some of the plot driven episodes we've seen in the past couple of weeks that we podcast about, like in prison
or in even last week's episode. In terms of like the slice of life episodes, it's probably not one of the best. I think one of the best in terms of that kind is in season two. You guys can probably guess which one I'm talking about. But I mean, you know, it's on a different standard because it is more slice of life and not plot driven.
I like the slice of life episodes down the line, honestly. Like, I remember the one with Zuko and Azula and the Fire Nation where they go to the beach. I think that's one of the better episodes in season three. So I don't mind like these filler episodes in a way. But yeah, this one's probably one of the weaker ones. Did you guys want to rank this out of four?
Yeah. So just as a brief reminder, we do our episode rankings where each week we rank each episode from 0 to 4 cabbages. We also take the listener score and average them up to get a score. And we average up all of our scores to get the final score, official Aang in Their score of the episode rankings. So, Zach, do you want to take it away? I know that you like this episode.
Yeah. I liked it. Honestly, I like the Jang Ganjin beef. I thought, the insults weren't funny, but I thought most of the gags like that the animators did landed. So I thought overall the humor hit more than it missed. So overall, I gave this a 3 out of 4, which is low compared to some of my other episode scores, but overall, decent ep.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
I actually also gave it a 3 out of 4. I think it's right at that passing grade where it's like a pretty good episode. There's nothing like, you know, spectacular about it. I think this is one of the few episodes that never shows up in the previously on Avatar. Like it's that inconsequential. But there are some good character moments. I think in terms of all cartoons, it's a good episode. In terms of Avatar, I think it's a meh episode. So that's why I'm at a 3. What about you, Iman?
Yeah, I think I'm leaning more for 2.5, if that's allowed.
Okay. Yeah,
For sure. Because I feel like I have to grade it on a different scale because it's not a plot episode. And like I just said, in terms of other episodes in a similar vein, I think it's probably on the lower end. So I'd go for 2.5. Although I do agree that there are great character moments between the trio that do translate into their growth in later episodes. So I think it's still a valuable episode.
The listeners here, this has the most variance of any of the scores. Some people were really high on it, giving it as high as like a 3.6, and one person gave it a 1.8. So we really are running the gambit here, but the average of the scores is a 2.7 for the listeners. So that will give the official Aang in Their score a 2.8.
Is that our lowest episode score yet?
I do think it is our lowest episode score yet. That's not really to say that it's a bad episode, but yeah, I think that it does just suffer a bit from, not being that consequential. I think it's got a bad reputation as well. So yeah, it's the worst one by quite a bit. Southern Air Temple has a 3.07, which was the previous low. Well,
yeah, I agree with all of that.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a battle to rank here.
I don't think there is any.
Yeah, so honor. I guess we'll just hop into some listener feedback. So as always, you can write in to avatar@poshorecaps.com or tweet @poshorecaps with your feedback. We had lots of questions asking which side we would be on the two tribes. I think Zach's made it very clear. he's Zhang all the way. So we can skip that. We actually had Felipe write in some questions for Iman, doing a little Glee Avatar crossover. Felipe asks, who is the Avatar of the Glee universe?
Who is the Avatar of the Glee universe? Oh my gosh. Off the top of my head, I probably have to say... Oof, that's so hard. Who is the most balanced of all of them? The thing about Ryan Murphy shows is that he writes in extremes. All of the characters are stereotypes.
Yeah, all of the people are like really big and dramatic. So probably any of them would be bad avatars if the world was left up to their hands. Yeah.
I probably have to try and go. Oh, this is going to kill me to say this, but it's the only one that makes the most sense. I think it has to be Mr. Shu. Oh. Because he is such a sappy person, and he is all about making everyone feel included, and everyone matters, and whoever auditions in the Glee Club can get into the Glee Club. And he's also about being fair. He can be firm when he really needs to be.
Okay.
He's a bit goofy too. He's not always right though, and avatars are fallible, so he's not the perfect character. He's a flawed character, but I think that his heart is always in the right place. That's like his calling card, and I feel like that is something, at least watching Aang, because there are more avatars than Aang, but if I am trying to choose the person that is like the most spiritually inclined towards Aang, mm-hmm. I think that it would be Mr. Shu.
All right, well, there you go. One other question about Glee crossover. Are there any songs that you'd want the Avatar Squad to do a cover of?
Felipe, I had to feel free to include Toph as well in that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry for putting you on the spot with these these Glee questions.
I was trying to think of something that... something by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
No, that's good. Yeah.
Earth, September, there you go. Those things, September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
That's perfect.
Who would be singing that? Would it be Iroh, I guess? Because I remember the lead singer, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, definitely. Iroh takes the lead, definitely.
Yeah. That's a great answer. all right. Well, there you go. Aaron wrote in and he said that the food situation seems really dangerous, leaving a whole group of refugees without food once they get to the other side, unless they carried their food on Appa. But what would the refugees do if they didn't run into a boy with a flying bison? I think this is a great point. Like, what would the refugees do on their long trip to Ba Sing Se if they didn't sneak food in?
Well, they would have just all died, as we saw, to be honest. They're sick. At least some people would have died. Like, they're sick and elderly, might have just passed away. Who knows? It's only a one-day trek, so maybe they could have just toughed it through. But like you guys were saying earlier, without Aang there, how do they even get through, like, all these canyon crawlers? The old man was quickly incapacitated. So, yeah, I don't think they would have been able to survive if they didn't, unless they happened upon Aang, which they did, so.
Yeah, Amon, do you think they have any shot?
If Aang doesn't show up, then that means Katara and Sokka also aren't there. So,
yeah.
Then the tribe that showed up with their people all at once would probably have to just go, and then the other one would just have to sit there and wait.
Yeah.
Sorry about it.
Yeah, it's really too bad. Aaron also wrote in and said, Aang's story is immediately going to get told to the people traveling on Appa and debunked. If the tribe heads were presumably born 108 years ago, then the tribe elders should have known them, or at least known enough details to recognize they weren't children. Amon, I think this is exactly what you were saying. But yeah, Aaron wrote in pointing out perfectly that, yeah, this story is falling apart as soon as the tribe gets back together.
Mm-hmm. And then this is what, they probably killed each other before they got to the Earth Kingdom. And honestly, they probably broke out into another fight in the woods somewhere and never heard from again.
Yeah, I was going to mention, so later we get to Ba Sing Se in the series and we don't see these people. So like, it would have been a nice callback to maybe like see they had opened up like a tea shop together or something. But no, like we don't see these people. I think we can presume that they probably got in another fight on their way to Ba Sing Se. That's
definitely
too bad.
Definitely.
Lydia wrote in, always have some nice feedback from Lydia's corner. She said, you already know what I'm going to say. This is an egregious underutilization of Appa. He could have gotten everyone across in like 6 trips, and yet he's napping for 2 days straight. Totally agree. Lydia also writes in and says, did Aang lose his bison whistle? As soon as the crawlers arrived, summoning Appa would have come in clutch. I think this is a great point. Do you think that Aang should have called in that bison whistle that we see in the past few episodes?
Yeah, he could have used that. Yeah. I find it funny how Lydia's like, you already know what I'm going to say, and then proceeds to go into a really nuanced point. That's pretty hilarious. So you already know what I'm going to say. Really? Do we? But I agree with her point here. It is an underutilization of Appa. But at the same time, you know what? Appa put the team on his back for like 4 episodes straight. So give him a break this episode. Why not? Let him eat his like 7/8 of a melon and just chill out and make only one trip. So, you know, yeah. Is it a underutilization? Yeah, but I don't mind Appa getting a little break here.
Yeah. Also, the episode would just be so boring if it's like one of those riddles, like how do you get all the people across, but like this person can't be with this person type thing. Like, I think it would get a little tiring. Last question from Lydia. She writes in, does this canyon guide offer insurance? Feels like going into a dangerous canyon with no backup earthbender and a guide who's obsessed with demolishing paths warrants some sort of money back guarantee. Maybe he could wait to destroy the earth bridge until some real actual firebenders arrive. You always need 2 points of egress. Come on now. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this canyon guide? Do you need insurance to go, or would you go no insurance?
I'm not sure.
I feel like it depends on the success rate. Like how successful is he? You know what I mean? Like I guess he's been doing it for a while, so maybe one can argue that you don't need the insurance. But I mean, okay. I feel like he's had to have had some close calls because, like I said, the guy is crazy. So
agreed. Zach, would you go on this canyon guide with this tour dude?
I don't know. I mean, if you have to, you have to. These people are refugees, so I don't know if they necessarily have a choice. But if I could go with insurance, I'd love that, because I don't know if I would trust this old man to keep us safe. I feel like, I wonder what his stats are with his success rate, like Aman was saying, because I bet like at least one person dies per trip or something like that, honestly.
And no one would ever know, because there's no Yelp reviews out there.
Exactly. He could just lie and say he's like the best tour guide in the whole world, and you'd have no way to fact check him.
He probably is the best canyon tour guide. It seems like there are no other people there. I was thinking that maybe I don't need insurance, but I sure would like if he got an apprentice there. You know, this dude's pretty old. He's a little crazy. Maybe if they got like a young earthbender to, you know, work on their earthbending and help him in case he breaks his arm. I think that's the solution.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well, thanks so much for writing in. As always, again, write into avatar@poshorecaps.com. We love getting your feedback.
Yeah, we read all the feedback. We really appreciate it when you guys send it. And you can also tweet at us. We usually respond to tweets all the time. So, yeah.
Yep. Cool. Yeah. So one last thing to get to. It is our tea quartet. Just as a reminder, we give a group of four and then we say which type of bender that group of four would be. We say one person's earth, air, fire, and what's the last one I said? Water.
Water.
I think water. Oh,
yeah. You're good.
My heart always starts beating whenever I say three of them. I'm like, which one did I start with this time? Anyway.
Just repeat all four of them again. Like, who cares?
Yeah, that's fair. Anyway, because we have Aman on, we are doing the fabulous four people in season one of Glee. Rachel Berry, Finn Hudson, Kurt Hummel, and Quinn Fabre. Is that how you say your last name?
Yep.
All right. Perfect. All right. So that's our foursome.
Yeah. I'll let you guys take the lead here. Cause I watched Glee in season one. I don't really have any like takes though. Like, cause I was reading into it and doing my research, but I don't know. It's so tough to slot real life people into bending types. That's always what I struggle with. I think Jane Lynch's character is the only one where is easy to peg. Everybody else, you could make so many arguments for them, in my opinion, at least. So I'm interested to hear what you guys end up going with.
Yeah. So I think, Aman, maybe the easy one is Rachel as a firebender. Do you agree with that take?
I agree as well. I think she obviously is very ambitious. She has a lot of Azula downside. She's very... very, very stalwart in whatever she wants. And at least in season one, she'll stop at like almost nothing to get what she needs. And that's not specific to the Fire Tribe or the Fire Nation, but it is something that I felt like she has a lot of power that she has in that manifests itself in her talent, but she doesn't always use it in the best way. So it's something that really needs to be contained. And I think that's very, very Fire Nation.
Yeah, I definitely thought that the ambition she has, you know, she really wants like that recognition. I feel like that's what made her the firebender in my eyes.
Lea Michele is pretty firebendery in real life too, especially when you're considering her beef with people on sets and stuff like that. Because I read an article about her on the set of Glee, so I don't know. I think you can argue both her and the character she portrays are firebenders here.
Many people fail to see the difference between Lea Michele and Rachel Berry. So
yeah. You go. Good casting, both firebenders. Iman, what's the next easy one for you?
Another easy one for me is kind of Kurt. I think he's obviously a very waterbender. He's the most adaptable character on the show, given what he's had to go through, being a closeted gay kid at school, to being the only open gay kid at school, to just all the progression of his character. Just speaks water to me. He's had to go with the flow. He's had to bend. He's had to know when to ebb and flow. He's had to sort of just take life as it comes. But he's also extremely strong, can become rigid, can become solid like ice when he needs to. I think water suits him the best.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he really does have to go through that versatile type of life. He's had a lot of struggles. Also, I think he's the one who I don't actually know is he a countertenor or a soprano in the series? Okay, yeah. So there you go. I think that's a pretty versatile vocal part as well. A bit of a stretch there to include that, but I agree. All right, what's up next, Iman?
I believe Finn, is Air.
Yeah.
Because he obviously is supposed to be cast as the jock, which would mean that he's supposed to be a mean guy, but he's never really been rooted in that stereotype, you know? From the beginning of the season, we know him to be this much deeper person than you would think upon first glance. And I believe, also as the series progresses, he's very wayward. He's never really known what to do with his life. And that's not to say that airbenders don't know what they're doing, but they are not tied down a lot of the time. They are very nomadic. And I think that spiritually Finn is very nomadic because he cannot figure out exactly what his calling is. And yeah, I think that speaks to his.
Yeah,
it's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I think he's the one who has no plans after he graduates, right? I think that fits an airbender's lifestyle pretty well. Cool. So I think that leaves just one person in one class left. So we have Quinn as the earthbender. I'm pretty sure I did that right. Oh, thank goodness. Yep. Oof. Yeah, so what makes Quinn the most earthbender of these four?
She is rock solid, y'all. I mean, she's known what she's wanted for a long time, but unlike Rachel, she's a little bit more contained, I would say, than Rachel is. She's not like a bull in China shop like Rachel is. Like, she is very firm. A lot of that, I think, is deeply rooted in the religion that she has. She's very firm on that. She has an image of herself that she wants to attain. She wants to be prom queen. She wants to have top status at the school. She wants the guy. She wants the eventual career and a stay-at-home. Like, she has everything in her life is just this way. She gives me very much Earth Kingdom upper tier. Mm-hmm. Like, she's right there. She's like, she lives next door to Toph's family. She scoffs at Toph. Like, that's where she is.
Yeah, she babysitted for Toph Beifong for sure. I think that's actually a great great call out there. Upper aristocracy of the Earth Kingdom. I think that's a good place to put her. All right, well, there you go. Boom, done. T Quartet, just as a brief reminder, we have Rachel as the firebender, we have Quinn as the earthbender, Finn as the airbender, and Kurt as the waterbender. Pretty sure I got all four. Right. All right.
Yes, you did.
This is very stressful.
It's all good. No, we're about done here. Sarah tweeted at us and she was saying, she was giving me shade a little bit. She was like, oh, Zach, you guys will have a lot more quartets to do and stuff. And I was like, yeah, but the thing is, I don't know. I'm pretty uncultured when it comes to I don't know how many more quartets we have. I feel like we've almost done kind of all the obvious ones. I think the one we haven't done yet is the Golden Girls. That's like one of the more obvious ones that we have. And it's a pretty on brand because Renap just did with the freakiest freak when they had Blanche, yeah. Devereaux with Bryce. I thought that was great. So maybe we'll do that in the upcoming weeks. Besides that, feel free to write in any quartets you have.
Yeah, I think next week we're going to do a bit of a sillier one. We're going to do the four states that are on the Four Corners monument. So Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado. This will give us a little more time to do some research for like the ones like the Golden Girls, stuff that I'm not super familiar with. We'll have to have a guest on who knows a bit more, Zach, for that one.
Okay. Okay. All good. Yeah. All good.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's all we have. Please do write in if you have any feedback, avatar@posherrecaps.com or tweet us @posherrecaps. Go on Apple Podcasts. Hit that subscribe button, smash those 5 stars, leave and rate a review. We really do appreciate it. I love seeing any time that we get a 5-star rating and a nice review. Amon, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram @AmonAdwin. The BB season is closing out. I believe I am done as far as RGP coverage for that. Of course, I still have the Choir Room with Matt Ligori. So check us out if you're a Glee fan. We have finished recaps for all 6 seasons of Glee. We've got a few Red Steels up there. And we are moving on to character analysis next. So if you are a Glee fan, you've got plenty of content at the Choir Room. So check us out.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on, Amon. This was a lot of fun. I didn't realize I'd have so much fun just talking about the Great Divide, but
yeah. Yeah, for sure. Zach, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter @ZachMohammed32. And I'll use this also. Our feed, postshowrecaps.com/ATLA. There you get a direct link to our feed and you can leave us a 5-star review. And yeah, what about you, Jacob? Where can people find you?
People can find me @JKRedman on Twitter. Also, I've been breaking down Big Brother All-Star 7 with Felipe and TikTok Nicole on the Brazilian Dragon Pod. So that's been fun. If you want to see a good season of Big Brother and have us laughing about the silly moments, you can find some stuff there.
All cool. Right. Yeah, I guess that's all for us. Thanks a lot, everybody. And peace out.
See you next time.
Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.